Well, good morning for Thursday, September 5th, 2013. You're listening to Consumerization Nation. I'm Jack Madden, and with me, as always, is co-host Colin Steele.
Good afternoon from Boston, Jack. We have a special guest, and I don't want to delay that too much, but I do want to take a minute to say that I am very sad and lonely here in the Boston podcast studio this week because our third co-host and our news writer for SearchConsumerization.com, Jim Furbush, is moved on to greener pastures and tried to join us for a farewell podcast today, but wasn't able to get it work technologically. But I just wanted to take a minute to say thanks to Jim for all his contributions in helping Search Consumerization get off the ground and for getting this podcast off the ground as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We will miss having Jim Furbush with us. He said he'll still be following the industry, and we were going to try to get him in today, but we had some technical difficulties with the Skype, so he's going to be listening. Jim, I know you're listening. I also concur. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Justin, when you post this, can you edit some like swelling violin music into that section to give it the real emotional punch that we need?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that'll be perfect.
I'd love to.
One of the last things that Jim arranged before he moved on was this interview with John Marshall of AirWatch. John, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the podcast today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for sitting through us waxing nostalgic about our time with Jim.
Well, thanks to Jim for setting it up then. So I'll wax as well. So there we go.
Yeah. So AirWatch, I guess, you know, so, you know, you and I have spoken before, but I think just like take, you know, 2 minutes to, you know, to tell us a little bit about yourself.
Great. So AirWatch was started about 10 years ago, actually, and we have grown up through the rugged mobility space and then into the smartphone space. Today we have just under 1,500 employees around the world, very large presence both inside North America as well as in Europe, Latin America, Asia Pacific. And we focus on providing enterprise mobility solutions across an entire platform of capabilities, everything from traditional device management to managing applications, the content, and all the content collaboration, email, browsing. And we've put together an entire platform that allows people to be productive at work or leveraging their consumer device in a BYOD scenario and take the holistic approach of managing not just the device, but also optionally a choice selection where you could do an MDM approach or a containerization approach and focus on just the data. So a holistic view of the world. And today we have about 8,200 customers and continue to ramp up pretty aggressively across all customer segments.
Yeah, and you said headcount like 1,500 people. I know that's really ramping up, too.
It is. Yeah, we've targeted this year to be about 1,700-1,800. So we're somewhere between 1,400 and 1,500, and that number continues to grow for us. A combination of development, service support, but also expanding sales reach and channel support through emerging markets now.
And not only are you the CEO, but you are also the co-founder, correct?
That's correct. So here from number one. So it's been quite a journey.
All 10 years. Wow. And the – so I know
– John, can you talk a little bit about, you know, what your vision was going into co-founding the company 10 years ago and how significantly it's changed? Because I bet – that it's pretty different than what you had imagined 10 years ago, given the changes in the market.
Well, 10 years ago, I wanted to be 1,500 people and 8,200 customers on our 10-year anniversary. So we're
wow, perfect. That's a pretty specific goal.
Yeah, I mean, we just hit right on it. So, no, you know, when I started the business, I wanted to be in wireless mobility, and previously, I had been in supply chain and technology. And I was ready for a little bit of a change of major, so to speak. And it was right at the time that the whole Wi-Fi era was taking off, and mobility wasn't where it is today. It was certainly past the early days of the, you know, people getting addicted to the CrackBerry in the, I'd say, late 90s, early 2000s, where BlackBerry really came on strong. And we were just at the early point of, you know, the, I'd say, the Palms and some of the other devices that were jumping into the mix. It was still pretty much, I'd say, a Windows Mobile world. There weren't really Symbian, Windows Mobile were probably the operating system outside BlackBerry. But I needed an entry point, and I started really doing a lot more on the wireless infrastructure side because that space was more mature. But I built a managed service component around a lot of the wireless infrastructure management. That I knew that ultimately wasn't where I wanted to be, but it was an entry point, and then quickly adapted, especially what really started to put a little bit of wind behind the sails was actually the recession in the mid-2000s. And that was because a lot of companies wanted some efficiencies of mobile devices in the workplace. And outside financial and sort of the professional worker of BlackBerry, it was the rugged community. And then expanding that rugged community, what happened was you got those early HTC Touch Pro 2 devices, unlimited data plans from Sprint and the carriers at the time. And then you had these early apps that would simply just confirm a work order or do a little bit of GPS tracking. But the value of that for service organizations was substantial. They could create a lot of efficiencies by tracking their delivery trucks, and we did a lot in the service business, everything from the pest control to the couriers to the document shredders, and that was really a lot of the early development, and then it just grew from there. The big pivot point
iPhone happened.
And then that was the big pivot point. So the pivot point was iOS 3 was the first time that you could do some of the, I would say, just the provisioning profiles or the early configuration profiles. There was no MDM on iOS 3. MDM really came out with iOS 4. And that's probably 3 months later is when the storm really started to pick up and take off. So that was the main point where we saw the vision of where iPhone was going. We pivoted the company and said, let's put all the developers, all the focus onto the smartphone. I think we just, luckily we had the vision to see it at that point. We jumped on it, and then we've never looked back from there.
And so of course, iOS 4 was summer of 2010, and you said a few months after that. So that's basically like this modern like MDM as we know it for iOS thing. All of like
3 years.
3 years.
In 3 years, this entire space has exploded, probably more like 2.5, because even, you know, there were very early adopters, but those were like the 10 device, you know, opportunities even in the fall of, I guess, 2010. So it was really the next year, and that was when it was probably after the holiday season where some executives got devices and then people started to have to lock them down a little bit for email and policies. So probably 2.5 years, and as a company, we've gone from, I would say, 150 people before then to where we are today. So pretty significant growth in 2.5 years.
And it feels like we're going to be approaching another turning point in the industry with some of the changes in iOS 7 around mobile application management. But before we get too far into that, I wanted to ask you, John, just about the difference between MAM and MDM and the areas of this whole overall management market that you see. Do you feel like customers are becoming a little more receptive to mobile application management and some of the other advanced technologies that we've been talking about for years, but are still kind of ramping up? Or do you see a lot of customers who are still stuck in that traditional IT device-centric mindset?
Let me repeat the question a little bit, because doing the call on my phone, somebody was dialing me in, so I lost the call for just a second. But I think the question was MDM and MAM and kind of the differences, and are they coming together? Was that the essence of the question?
Not so much from a product standpoint, but from a customer standpoint, are you seeing more interest in MAM, or are customers still stuck in the traditional IT device first mindset?
Great. Yep. I think a great question. It really just depends on the evolution of the company itself. And most companies, that started to build an app, as soon as they get past their first couple apps, they really accelerate. And I think that in early days, people did think of the space as separate. But I think for the most part, it's collided now on the product side. On the customer side, it is very much once somebody gets the efficiency of building a couple of apps, then it just accelerates. And the good news is, in the early days, there weren't a lot of public enterprise apps that drove that behavior. I mean, you just didn't have all the, let's say, even a Concur or something from Salesforce or the, you know, even the Delta app that helps you both on the consumer and the professional side. So in the iOS 3 and the iOS 4 days, you didn't have these consumerish enterprise apps. And so it was very much on device management because you were protecting email. And now what's happened is you've got this plethora of apps, and now you've got Evernote and these Office solutions and these collaboration tools. And so the big picture here is the apps are driving MDM. So it's, you know, it's kind of, it's almost that they're each driving each other to a certain extent. But the thing that's also accelerating that is the enablement of the back-end systems and the maturity of the development community. So all of that has to work together. When you have scarcity of developers that know the tool and they're focused on gaming or on, you know, I'd say more consumer apps, you didn't have the resources in the enterprise, and that matured a lot in the last year and a half. You had to have a lot of back-end integration. So some of these tools require APIs, and they required some infrastructure investments on the back-end services. And then you actually had the, you know, you had the education stage of getting a lot of enterprise users that maybe weren't as savvy as the, you know, the kid with the smartphone to start leveraging a mobile app in a different type of work environment. Even something simple like mobile point of sale in retail. In many retailers, the frontline worker may not have had a smartphone. So now that the frontline worker has used a smartphone to check somebody out at the cash register as a new tool, then they want 10 other applications to do other labor planning and scheduling or other stuff. So it's been an evolution.
Well, if I can jump in. So I'm curious, like maybe where you see a lot of your customers at. You know, a lot of people that we talk to about, you know, about mobile device management and mobile app management, it's still there are so many that are you know, there are, you know, a huge number of companies that aren't developing their own internal mobile apps, and the conversation about mobility for them is still around how do we secure email, because securing email, you know, today we, you know, face it, it's still, you know, a compromise between, you know, one of a few different techniques. And, you know, how are we going to secure the, you know, are we going to secure the device? And if so, how? And, you know, so many of the conversations still seem to be at that level. And so like what do you see the divide is between the customers that are like having those levels of conversations versus the customers that are saying like, hey, we're going to use these apps, or we're going to build this app, or we're going to mobilize this? Like, what's the divide?
It's an interesting question, and there's a lot of regional and geographic thought behind it as well. So let's just look at it from a North America perspective. Smartphones have been prevalent through the carriers for the last couple of years. I don't sense it's as much small versus enterprise as most people would think. A lot of people would say, oh, the bigger companies may have moved faster because the small guys don't have the resources, which is, in this world, a little bit counter, because in many cases, the smaller companies had to be a little bit more clever and creative, and creating an app on the iPhone was a huge enabler. I mean, a small company 5 years ago couldn't have gone and built an enterprise-grade application to improve their business. Now, you know, they can have, you know, their high school student or, you know, a family member. If you're a small business owner with 50 people, you know, you can have one of your employees build an app in a couple of weeks that can drive huge efficiencies. So I think what you're seeing is it's, you know, it's across all segments, really based on leadership and innovation within the companies. You have large enterprise companies that have hundreds of apps, or even, you know, in smaller doses, 5 or 10 or 20. And then you have you know, large enterprises that are just, they haven't even bought an MDM yet. They're still using ActiveSync. So it's all over the map. I think it has to do a lot with leadership. It has to do with vertical markets. I've seen adoption at a wave in vertical markets where you would think some markets are definitely fast, but they're actually slow because of regulation and concern. So healthcare, there's a lot of opportunity for innovation, but in many ways, there's liability, there's risk, there's reasons why it's not moving quite as quickly. And versus another one, let's say that's more sales oriented and you've got a lot of salespeople in the field. So it's all over the map. The big difference then globally would be in different markets, you have devices that have not been out there as much in the smartphone capacity. You don't have data plans that are as friendly. So there's not as much value in building apps because the data plans are very limiting. The phones, you know, in many markets in India or emerging markets could be extremely expensive. So you really just have the top end that still have them. And the low end, they might have an Android phone, but it's a very low end Android phone still. So I think there's a lot of cost, carrier, data plan, infrastructure, things that weigh in on a global basis. North America, it's leadership, but it's also regulation that's either pushing or slowing things down.
So I guess to distill that, yes, it's all over the map.
It's all over the map.
Yeah. So talking more about, you know, what state customers are coming in and like where they are in their thought process, you know, we had, you know, had a related note on, you know, how have, you know, customers coming to AirWatch, how has the mindset changed between like, you know, like a very generic, like we need to secure our devices and be able to remote wipe them and put a passcode on them versus we need to take advantage of mobile and enable our workforce perspective. Now that this MDM thing has been around for 3 years and, you know, mobility is doing its proverbial, it's taking off, are people's attitudes of this, you know, lockdown, you know, for compliance versus enable so that we can actually get work done, you know, is how's that changing? Is that all over the map too, or?
It's all over the map, but I would say part of it has been the pace of evolution from this, you know, the set of vendors in this space has been so fast and furious that I would say that's actually helped accelerate a broader adoption of capabilities. We just don't have that many trials that are a checklist of lock and wipe now. Even, you know, smaller or less sophisticated customers now want to link into their, you know, their documents in Google or SkyDrive, and they want to, you know, tie into, let's say, you know, their corporate Wi-Fi, even in a small business or something. We're just seeing more advanced requirements. And the challenge that I think all the vendors have in this space is there is no implementation cycle for the most part after a sale. Most companies want to try out every single piece of the software and know that every single thing in the software works to their standards before they make a purchase. And we've, you know, all the vendors have made it that easy. We all do trials and POCs. So we've helped propel the, I would say, the use cases from lock and wipe to much more advanced just by the sheer volume of innovation.
Yeah. And since lock and wipe is like, you know, it's right there in the APIs that are built into all the devices. And, you know, any one of 100 different vendors can go and like turn on that lock and wipe capability for you, you know, no problem.
There's free vendors, and certainly the people will use the free ones, and they can still use ActiveSync to do that too. So there's lots of options to do that.
Yeah, I guess if you're just talking about that, then you have like, yeah, then you always have the, well, competing against ActiveSync, which is they're already in free. So I guess you definitely have to talk about more than that, no matter what.
Well, you do, but I would say on the flip side, there is a value to the service and support side. And all the supporting documentation and training and webinars that we're providing. You know, you can say we could just have a lot of customers. Maybe they're not doing just lock and wipe, but they could be pushing down a passcode profile, their POP or, you know, SMTP, or their, you know, email settings. and a couple of, you know, minor things, maybe even some recommended apps. The challenge a lot of companies have when it comes to apps, even if they're not building their own, is that your employees can waste a whole lot of time trolling through the app store. Look, I was a small business owner 10 years ago when I had 1, 2, 5, 10, 20 employees. The last thing I wanted them to do was waste a bunch of time trying to find the right GPS app or something in the store. I'd rather just say, here's the one that works best for our business.
But like in the era of, you know, consumerization and, you know, consumers are used to using their, you know, in my personal life, I'm used to, you know, I want an app to tell me when the next subway train in San Francisco is going to come, because usually it's a long time or an inconsistent time here in San Francisco. But, you know, I went and tried out a couple, like, isn't that just sort of part of the, like that app thing in particular, isn't that just sort of part of modern life?
You know, it is, but again, when you're a small business owner, again, I'll give you the perspective that, I'll give you a good example. I land in London and maybe I don't know how to use the tube. It's crazy, but I'm telling you, at least a year ago, there were plenty of tube apps where you had to be online to use the app. And I'm sorry, it's just stupid because there were, you know, there was no Wi-Fi at the time or no cell service down in the tube. So,
and if you're there, you know, and roaming.
Yeah. So I think, you know, the maturity of the overall space, searches, recommendations, you have to remember all of that has moved tremendously too. But you could waste a lot of time on some simple app searches or finding, you know, the right stuff for your business. So my only point is, I think we were back to the lock and the wipe and what's the value that companies provide over the free solutions. Creating, you know, even basic app catalogs for companies to put recommended apps, to allow employees within a company to choose their, you know, to share their favorite recommended apps. We do a lot of airlines. So a pilot lands in Hong Kong, and they don't really go to Hong Kong that route that much, they would prefer to know the apps that their other pilots use most often than just what's available on the App Store. So you don't think about those little things as saving people time and energy, but all these little elements added together create a value of a fully integrated application versus something that you'll find for free.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
A lot of the things we were just talking about, John, were differentiators or potential differentiators, but kind of more from the recommendation or consulting professional services side of things and doing those extra things that can save your customers time and money. But as more areas of enterprise mobility management become at risk of being commoditized through things like what Apple is doing with iOS 7 and building more MAM features directly in, what areas do you see, technology areas, do you see as potential differentiators where you at AirWatch are trying to do things technologically above and beyond what everybody out there already offers?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think it's a great question, in that we're in a race to commoditize ourselves as well. I mean, we launched our AirWatch Pro, which is sort of a very low-cost solution for these basic features. I mean, it wouldn't contemplate, or it wouldn't cross my mind that at some point, you know, it could be a low-cost, no-cost solution in the future for the low-end capability to match, you know, something else that's out there. But the point that really most people forget is when you get into a business and you want to do BYOD, you're going to have to support lots of different devices. And when you want to support Apple and Samsung and HTC and then a Kindle and a Nook and all these different types of things, you're not going to get the level of maturity of the free solutions, and they're not going to be able to keep up. And if they're not able to keep up with the APIs and the innovation, then that creates business risk because they're not going to be able to secure that environment effectively if they don't have the R&D strength and the bandwidth and the breadth to cover every single interface across every single platform. And then you don't think about the fact that, for instance, at our user group next week, we have 80 to 100 technology partners. MDM, when it started, was very standalone. App management, when it started, was very standalone. Everything that started, you know, was very standalone. But now it's full of APIs. It's full of integration because the real value of all of these solutions is no longer standalone. It is leveraging the other 15 years of IT investments that companies have made. And that's where you're not going to get all the stuff from a free solution.
Oh, yeah.
So John, do you think that, just to follow up quick, do you feel like BYOD is a trend that's going to stick around, or do you see more of a trend towards trend back towards corporate issuance of devices?
Oh, no, BYOD is here to stay, and it's going to evolve and be even more effective as there's, I would say, some policy and even some case law around it. And what I mean by that is a lot of companies struggle with the HR part and reimbursements, and is it legal or illegal to do a reimbursement in this country, and how much should it be in a stipend? And the analogy that I use is, you know, when I was a young kid, every salesperson had a Ford Taurus. And there was no bring your own car, you know, for a salesperson. You know, if you were an on the road salesperson, you got issued whatever it was, probably a Chevy or a Ford. But once the laws and the regulations of insurance and how much reimbursement you can get per mile and all that kind of stuff settled down, is bring your own car if you're a salesperson. I think what we're missing is just some maturity around all of the other elements, not necessarily the technology, but the governance structures, and that's going to accelerate BYOD over the next 2 years.
And you know that's a really good point that you make, John. And the you know we sort of use this analogy before, like you know for the mechanic. Well, so the thing that came into my mind, like the mechanic that changes the oil and replaces the tires and overhauls the things in the car, working on that company Ford Taurus versus working on the employee's, you know, own car, like it's all just working on cars. So like, you know, like I've been, you know, saying for a while, like, you know, supporting an iPhone that somebody brought in or an iPhone that, you know, was purchased by the company. Hey, and it's an iPhone either way.
It is and it isn't, because in some cases you've got some privacy things you have to be more careful of. I think you're very concerned. If it's a company car, you know, then obviously if the mechanic drops, you know, something on it and scratches a little bit of it, you know what, you know, somebody might say something to him, but it's not going to be a big deal. If it's a personally owned car and the mechanic scratches the paint on it, then, you know, somebody's going to be a little bit more upset when they find that. It's the same way in BYOD. If you tinker with somebody's device or something accidentally happens to it, they're going to be a little bit more upset. So there's just some different parameters around it.
Yeah. So I wanted to one of the things that you mentioned a few minutes ago when in response to Colin's first question is you mentioned supporting APIs to manage the Kindle and like the Nook and different versions of Samsung and HTC. And always the thing that has impressed me about AirWatch is that like every single, you know, new version of a new device comes out, there's like AirWatch saying like, hey, we have support for these APIs. And like the list of different versions of different platforms of everything is you know, is immense. And it seems to me like that's, like you said, that's one of the things that really differentiates AirWatch. And so the related question was going to be, and, you know, since we were talking about 2010, you know, when iOS 4 MDM came along, and, you know, then suddenly, because the mechanics of, you know, pushing a configuration profile to iOS really aren't that extremely difficult, and suddenly we have, you know, like a year later, there are like 80 or 100 different companies supporting iOS MDM. So I guess the first part of my question, well, like obviously there are some differentiators there in, you know, the how broad of, you know, all of the other things that a given MDM vendor supports. But what I'm really wondering is, you know, so among like the, you know, the larger, more prominent MDM vendors, some of it, you have some of them that are coming at it, you know, from, you know, their large security firms that provide MDM. There are, you know, the Citrixes and the VMwares of the world that can, you know, an AppSense that can incorporate their MDM with existing, you know, desktop and desktop application management, you know, stuff. And then there are players like AirWatch that have more of a core just mobility, you know, background. So I guess that's somehow a question. I don't know, Colin, help me out.
No, I think you're asking for differentiation on the higher end of the market. And, you know, this goes back to if when you're building a security platform, having a foundation that is consistent versus cobbled together is always a good thing. And if you look in this space, traditionally acquisitions have been very hard to integrate and pull together. I mean, we saw Symantec, McAfee, SAP. There's a long list of people that have done acquisitions. So, you know, Citrix is obviously a very good company, but their platform consists of four or five different products, and it just magically won't all come together overnight. And it won't come together in such a way that you have a standard set of APIs, one set of APIs to all these different solutions. So, you know, there's certainly the space is moving so quickly. So we're moving 100 miles an hour. They're moving 100 miles an hour. But they also have to not only move 100 miles an hour, they've got to consolidate four or five different platforms together. And that's certainly a challenge. Obviously, they'll get there over time. The real fundamental difference, though, when you look at the bigger companies, we've got more employees in development than a lot of our competitors do dedicated in their entire company to mobility. You know, at 400 to 500 people in development, QA, R&D, product management, that's a substantial amount of effort that we're putting through. And you talk about, let's say, a configuration profile. Well, who cares about one? But what if you're pushing out a configuration profile to 50,000 users? And what if you have to do it with high availability across multiple data centers because that email profile is mission critical for a company to do their job? Or a lot of our competitors just don't have detailed compliance engines that are automated. They generate an alert, and then it's up to a system admin to go push something out and modify somebody's individual device. We've spent a ton of time putting automated rules and compliance, so 95% of the stuff that has to happen happens automatically behind the scenes. But then how do you build an architecture that will scale to go get information off of 50 or 100,000 devices every few minutes, process all of that, and then automatically apply compliance rules and then take action on those devices, or deploy out 50,000 applications or 50,000 application updates at one time? These are the types of things that start to really separate and why AirWatch has been so successful in many of these, you know, very large accounts with huge installs.
Yeah, go ahead, Jack.
Okay. And I imagine that would be the answer to the question if somebody says, hey, my vendor X, you know, whether it be, you know, my existing security vendor, my existing, existing vendor for whatever it is, hey, this vendor X that I'm already a customer of can, you know, throw in some MDM for a, you know, for a low price or free on top of, you know, because we're already buying so much other stuff. So I guess...
Yeah, that's kind of the question that I wanted to ask. I mean, if you see, a company like VMware or Citrix, they kind of tout that as one of their selling points. Well, customers are already using us for virtualization. There's a natural draw to then turn to them for their enterprise mobility solutions as well. Are you seeing that? Or, you know, some of the people I talk to from those customer bases say, well, yeah, we're already a customer of them, but we're a customer of them for X, and enterprise mobility has nothing to do with this. So we don't really have any preference towards them in this area. Do you have any harder time selling to existing companies that may offer EMM as a sort of side product?
Well, there's three or four different questions in there. One is somebody gives
it away
for free. Okay, so for, you know, I say free like a puppy. I can go get, you know, that puppy might be free, but it cost me a lot of money over time. We've seen a lot of heartburn, and you know, for these solutions are not expensive. Okay, look at how much the pricing has been commoditized for the level of innovation you're getting. I think most companies that are rolling out multi-million dollar devices or projects related to an app or an infrastructure or a critical component to their business are not willing. They were a year ago. They're less willing to say, let me take that free solution and govern my entire mobility fleet and create the success or failure of all of this investment around a free solution that even if I paid full price for, probably cost me, you know, a couple $100,000, under $1 million for, you know, at the worst case, you know, for a huge, you know, segment or something. And then when you're looking at the total scale, it's nothing. Okay, so I think a lot of people say, oh, free, I'll take it. But we just don't hear about them getting that stuff implemented. And over time, the salesperson cares less about giving it away. It hurts their deals. The other one is, so that's one part of it. You know, the other part on the free stuff is, look, I can go get life insurance from the guy on the corner. But when I really need it, that doesn't mean it's going to be there. And when you're giving stuff away for free, it often doesn't mean that you've got all the other investment behind it in terms of portals, resources. And 2 years ago, nobody cared about that other stuff. But now people do care about support, resources, user groups, you know, having a 24/7 number. It matters because this stuff is critical and it's career limiting if you mess it up. So I just don't think as much people are saying, oh, it's free, I'll just take it because I'm the IT director and it's an economic decision. On the side of, hey, I have Cisco or I have Citrix or I have something else and now they're offering MDM, you know, like you said, those companies have a lot of products. In some cases, they have great C-level visibility. But what's happening is we're seeing a lot of those companies try and move away from the POC, move away from the demo, and at least in the short term, position more of vision and slide. And I think this is an interesting time where we can't really sell futures in this space because you go into a sales call and they want trial credentials that afternoon, and they're going to test everything you say, and they're not going to buy the software until they see it all work. So it's a little bit different than, let's say, when an ERP could go freeze the market 5 years ago and say, we're going to build this massive module. Don't go buy it from somebody else. You know, you can get it in the cloud. You can turn it up. You can be there today. It doesn't force you to be captured into it forever. It's a hard space to say, I'm going to buy it from this company because I already do business with them if it's not the right product for your business. If it's the right product and it manages the feature set, why wouldn't you buy it from that company? But you wouldn't buy it. And I see it less and less just because somebody says, oh, I sell that too.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I know we have just around 10 minutes left, and there are three other things that I wanted to hit on with you. So one of them is Mac OS X, Windows 8.1, like the management of desktops, you know, is becoming much more MDM like, and I know that AirWatch was right there at the beginning of MDM like management for OS X, and so that's interesting. And so, what can you tell us about that?
We've had Mac management in our platform for the last 18 months. We started with the very first profiles that you could do, going back kind of a year and a half ago. We also built our own agent a while ago that can do additional things on the Mac. It's critical. We're deep in education, and we're seeing bring your own Mac and supporting Macs really pop up in the enterprise. So we see Apple doing a great thing with Maverick, and we're right there with it. We have every one of the features ready to go, as that comes to market. On the Windows 8.1, we're ready there as well. So we're excited about that platform. They've done a good job. We believe that laptops going forward will be managed the same way as PCs, with the exception of, I would say, that the highly regulated or the desktops that are these tight, wound down corporate use. I mean, in a utility or a financial firm, the desktop that's used for trading, that's going to be ghosted and imaged and heavy-handed management, like through SCCM or CA or Tivoli or something like that. But I think what you'll see is
those,
a greater...
Sorry, just to interrupt there, you mentioned SCCM. Microsoft is kind of adding some MDM-like capabilities to that as well. And if you are a customer who has already invested a significant amount of money in a desktop management solution and slowly it's adding mobile management capabilities, do you see a new competitive front there in the enterprise mobility market?
Yes and no. Again, you're going to have customers that buy a lot from Microsoft, but at the same time, neutrality matters. And Samsung isn't going to run to Microsoft, especially now, and say, here's how you implement Knox, and here's how we certify you on safe. And so if you really want to support bring your own device and bring your own laptop, there is an element that's critical for neutrality. And I don't think that you're going to see that level of capability from an individual operating system manufacturer.
So to change tack a little bit. This is maybe I want to hear, like the John Marshall word on somebody asks the questions like, so looking at mobile, how mobile is, so there are two questions here. Like, if you could start, fresh, from the whiteboard and like design quotes, like how we do mobile and how we do management, what would it look like if you could start fresh? And the other related question is, who or what do you think, looks cool and is exciting in really the world of mobile or mobile management?
Well, if I could start fresh, I would have done like an Instagram or something, done a 15-person company, sold it for $1 billion, and after a year. So, yeah. Wouldn't we all have done that one? So, what I think is exciting, I think we're just getting to this new era of true collaboration. What I don't think we're seeing a lot yet is enterprises that are able to do things cross enterprise. And we're not there yet, and the security models and all that stuff, the framework doesn't support it yet. But think about gaming. Okay, gaming, you can do anywhere with anybody. But when it comes to most enterprise apps and enterprise productivity things, other than moving a document around or sharing ratings or something, there's not a lot there yet. And or you can use Google Docs and share stuff, of course. So I think we're on the verge over the next year or two of a lot more cross-company collaboration between suppliers and vendors and ad agencies and those types of things in mobile. The tools will permit that with new security models. I think that's something that's on the horizon, but not here yet.
Yeah, that is. And in the small group, the people that just work at BrianMadden.com, we're all like Google Docs, everything, editing stuff at the same time. And it's cool.
Great. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was going to say. I have. I know we're coming up on our time limit. I have like one last group of questions, but I wanted to see Colin if you had anything else.
Let's see. One of the questions that came in from Twitter that I liked was, "What's your take on mobile virtualization and mobile hypervisors and dual, I guess to broaden it a little, dual persona technology in general? Do you get any questions from customers about that and demand for offering it?"
Yeah, I think there's a couple different pieces. One is, dual persona is certainly already happening. I mean, we're just as part of our 6.5 release, we are fully supporting a true containerization without MDM. We're allowing dual persona. You can truly do it on an Android device. You can, it's more of a, I would say, logical view on an iOS device or something else. But separating and creating a company workspace, I think, is very popular, especially as this broadens out to a wider community of users.
Is it popular for IT or popular for users?
I think it depends on the use case. IT likes it in a secure, highly regulated industry. Users like it, I would say, when you get to frontline workers that just, might be newer to mobile. So if you have frontline workers that may not have as much experience, we take for granted how much we use mobile. But, when you have an older employee that might be working at a retail environment, to have one place to go click and find everything, it's kind of helpful as opposed to them scrolling four pages on a device. So I think it depends on the environment. In terms of the whole virtualization, I think it's a little bit like every one of these components. Certainly when, wrapping, the whole world was about app wrapping, 2 years ago. App wrapping is a nice tactical component, but it's a risky element to bet your business on because any one of those APIs could change. And it kind of is a shortcut to maybe something that you could properly do longer term in a better app development cycle. When it comes to virtualization, this was really designed for the desktop. So a lot of it requires kind of keyboard and mouse. It's heavy-handed. It requires a persistent connection. And so you look at creating virtualization on a device, and most data plans around the world are not going to be favorable to that. Even most Wi-Fi environments and the best Wi-Fi environments are not really going to be favorable to that. That's not really how apps are designed. Apps are designed now to be quick and easy and do a couple of things. Even in healthcare, where virtualization for patient records has been important, I think there's different ways through browsers and things to accommodate some of that. So I'm not negative on it, but I feel like, of course, you know, since Citrix did an acquisition in this space, you know, they're hyping it as the only way to do stuff or is so critical. But it is, you know, it's one component for use cases that matter. But I also feel like when you look at latency, data plans, how the apps were written, a lot of the apps that are virtualized were more for a desktop community.
Yeah, I think Colin was actually referring to Colin. Were you referring to the Horizon Mobile?
I meant like
Android
virtualization,
PM?
Not like
oh, yeah.
One of the ways to enable dual persona by putting a hypervisor on the phone. But
you can
that too. So.
And, you know, so Colin, I sort of view that, you know, like in the Android world, like as just another flavor of fragmentation in the Android world. And like some of these, you know,
which is funny because the argument for it is that it is needed to address the issue of fragmentation.
Yeah. Yeah. This is,
well, I mean, look at Nox. I mean, Nox is a form of, you know, of a container that is done at the Samsung level to create consistency in that sort of, you know, that separate workspace, separate element. But I totally agree. If you're working across lots of different Android devices, if you could create, you know, one container or workspace that keeps everything consistent, one of the number one complaints is just consistent email experience on Android. And that's why we actually had to go build our own Android email client. Was if somebody's all Samsung or HTC, great, use their email if that's the preferred one. But if you want to support BYOD and you want to connect to your Exchange 2003 or your Lotus or Notes or whatever, then you might have to have something that creates a consistent experience across all of those, and you might want to put it in a container or a separate area. So all of these are really valid use cases. To a certain extent, I think the operating systems will improve over the next 2 years, and a lot of the kind of, I'd say, shortcut things will go away, and you'll get a purer view from the operating system itself.
Yeah, like iOS 7, you know, reducing the need for, you know, for app wrapping in some situations and things like that.
Well, I can't really comment on iOS 7.
Yeah,
that was a trick. You tried to trick me. I'm sorry.
No. This almost
worked too. So close.
No. This is all, you know, I've been writing a ton about iOS 7, but it's all based on, you know, the scant information. Speaking of iOS 7, so, you know, I know we're over our time here, but of course, so next. Next week is the AirWatch, you know, Connect User Conference, and I'll be down there. So that's going to be interesting. So if there does happen to be some sort of event during the conference, you know, like on the 10th or something, then I guess we'll get a lot of people like following feeds on their phones or whatever. Or,
you know, I wrote my early letter to Santa Claus hoping that iOS 7 will come out, you know, by next Tuesday or Wednesday so we could talk freely about it at the conference. So if it does, that's great. We'll be ready. We'll upgrade a lot of environments, and people will be very excited to attend a bunch of sessions on it. If it doesn't happen, then, you know, then there'll be webinars on it after the fact. So, you know, we'll just play it by ear. But
yeah,
and of course, hopefully it does.
Of course, for now, this is all speculation, and we'll know the true answer when we know it.
When we know it, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this conference because so one of my I was looking for, you know, if there are any AirWatch blogs written by any AirWatch executives or any AirWatch executives on Twitter, and so like that community presence. Sometimes, like I've seen, you know, at you know, some vendors are very active in that, you know, community blogging and community Twitter. And maybe I'm not looking in the right place, but I haven't seen as much of that in the past from AirWatch. And so I guess this is why I'm looking forward to coming down and seeing everybody to really get the, you know, like the good feel for, you know, the environment there and what's going on.
Well, I you're absolutely right. I mean, I barely take time to eat or breathe or sleep. So so it's hard to write a blog. And I think we've been pretty focused. But it's an important part of creating the community. Our customers have seen us evolve what's called My AirWatch, where they can go see a lot of information and constant updates. We do believe that it's important to extend that out further.
Is that public facing or is that customers only?
It's customers and partners, and we will be making more of it public facing in the near future.
Doing my research on the website, there was an open job listing at AirWatch for like a community presence manager or something like that.
Well, you're looking into the future. So I think it's definitely an area that we want to invest in more and make sure that we are, providing the proper level of industry insight and thought leadership. So we'll definitely take your advice on it and some tools and tricks and tips when you're here next week and look forward to more on that topic in the near future.
I know you've got to run. Colin, any other things that we should, that we want to mention?
I just wanted to thank John for being on the show, and if I could get a quick plug in, pretty much a month from today in New York City at Interop, I am speaking, moderating a panel on the future of enterprise mobility management. So if you're listening and you're in the New York City area, come check it out. It's on October 4th. The show is all that week.
Yeah. As long as we're doing plugs, by the way, then I'll mention that my enterprise mobility management book is the physical copies are available on Amazon.com now. It says temporarily out of stock, but you order it and you'll get it. But the cool thing with that Amazon did is now that if you buy the physical book, you can. I have enabled that in the future you'll be able to get the Kindle version for free. So the Kindle version that will get updated for iOS 7 soon. So that's exciting. So thanks for that plug, Colin. There we have some personal plugs there. And of course, so John, your big plug is the AirWatch conference next week that we're all excited about.
Great. Well,
unless there's anything else you have.
Well, certainly. Well, the purchase order desk is open. So no, I'm just kidding. but I really, really appreciate the opportunity. I'm not sure how many of those questions came from the audience, but this was the first time for me to be on the podcast. Hopefully, we'll do more to come. And if you have any specific questions, feel free to just reach out to AirWatch, the info at AirWatch, and we'll get back to you. But great opportunity to speak with you and the team, and appreciate the audience joining.
Yeah, thank you very much. I really appreciate you being able to put up with all of our questions and heckling.
No problem. Have a great day.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening.